From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. It's that time of year when students are returning to colleges across the state. In fact, at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, where our show is produced, it's the first day of the fall semester. And instruction at Illinois' flagship university resumes today under new leadership. Charles Isbell is taking over from Robert Jones, who served as chancellor of the school for 9 years. He departed to become president at the University of Washington. Chancellor Isbell is a computer scientist who was previously provost, the number two job, at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He's originally from Atlanta, went to the Georgia Institute of Technology for his undergrad studies, and he earned his Ph.D. in computer science at MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. My Illinois Public Media colleague and education reporter, Emily Hayes, spoke with Isbell last week. It was their second conversation after a brief introductory interview earlier in the summer. This time, they talked about what he's learned on the job so far, his role in the state's upcoming Quantum Park, and how he plans to adapt to federal funding cuts to higher education. Because the conversation is on tape, we're not taking calls live for this part of the show, but you can let us know what you thought. Our email address is talk@21stshow.org. talk@21stshow.org.
Hello, Chancellor Isbell. So nice to see you again.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine.
Yeah. So it's been a few weeks since you officially took over at the leadership of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign on August 1st. What is something you've learned in this time that you didn't expect?
Well, I don't know whether I expect it or not, but I think the big thing that I've learned over the last few weeks is that this place is as advertised. It really does care about its mission. It really is truly interdisciplinary. The people here understand that what they're doing is important, and they think very carefully about what they do. I think that's what I hoped I would see. It's what I knew from my own time visiting here over the years, but it's been really gratifying as I've gotten to meet more and more folks and to really sort of understand that they care so much about this place and understand that what they do is important.
Mm-hmm. It looks like you've settled into your new office. What's something you brought with you?
Oh, well, so I haven't completely settled into my office. We're still getting things together, but I brought a few things with me that are, I think, important, that mean a lot to me. You can't quite see it, it's off screen here, but I have over there a picture of my academic ancestry. Every single, my advisors, going back at least to the 1300s, Galileo's in there, Copernicus is in there, that I really like the idea that I'm a part of history, that I'm a part of a story that has been going on for centuries and hopefully will go on centuries after. And along with that picture of all of my ancestors, I have all of my descendants, all of my PhD students, the folks that I've worked with over the years. And I look up every day and I see the people that I've been able to be a part of, and I get to know that I helped them along in their journey.
They are wearing funny hats and glasses. What is that about?
These are not funny hats and glasses.
Oh, I'm sorry.
They are part of a research group. My research group is called P-Funk, which is a callback to Parliament Funkadelic and something I grew up, music that I grew up listening to. It stands for something. I won't bore you with the details, but the P means probabilistic. So what they're all wearing is an actual hat and star glasses that George Clinton and other people that were part of P-Funk used to wear. And when they graduate, when they're done, when they get through their PhD, I give them a pair of fuzzy dice, because randomness for probabilistic, and nothing is funkier than fuzzy dice.
Excellent. So now that you live here, what do you see as the University of Illinois' role in the local community?
I love that question, because I think it has built in an assumption that really matters, which is that we are a part of the local community. We're a part of it. That means that we affect it, we help move it forward, we're a part of that conversation, but we're also affected by it. I think one of the mistakes that people make in general is they get really excited about what they do as they start to think of what they're doing, is that is the center of the story and that's what they're here for. It's really we're about is we're about being a part of a larger story. You listen as much to others as you talk to them, you have those kinds of ways of interacting with one another, and I think that what the point of this place is to educate and to be in an ongoing conversation with everyone locally, and everyone as you get in bigger and bigger circles and out into the whole wide world. So I think that we have to remember that, and we have to be a part of understanding what the people around us need, what they want, and we listen to them to find out what that is. So short answer to your question is, we are a part of a conversation, and we're an important part of that conversation, and conversation is both listening and talking.
The state is investing $500,000 into a University of Illinois quantum and microelectronics park planned for Chicago. Is there an example of research you could see taking place both here and there?
Oh, yes. In fact, I find the connection between Champaign-Urbana and Chicago, it's a corridor. It's a the work that we do here touches there. The work that is done there touches us and touches out through the rest of the state. IQMP is an amazing investment by the state. It is a partnership, not just with this university, but with other universities, both within the state and out in the region and out across the country. And what it represents is a connection not just with what we do here and what our colleagues at other universities do, but also with industry. With government, with a wide variety of people. And in fact, the people who live in that part of Chicago where the buildings are going to go up, where we're going to be working with them for what should be a real economic opportunity. What's special about that for me is not just all of these people are coming together and working on something, but because they are coming together and working on something, that means we have an opportunity that almost no one else has to actually make progress on something that's going to radically transform in a positive way what we're able to do. I think that investment by the state is an amazing sort of commitment to the idea that if we work together, we can change something, but also without it, it takes 10, 20, 30, 40 years to get to where we want to go, where we might be able to do that within the decade. It's incredibly exciting to me, and it connects with a ton of work that we do here, whether it's on the computing side, whether it's physics, just all of the parts that are going to have to go into making this work. I think it's one of the most exciting things that is happening in the country.
Do you have you seen anything in the past few weeks where talking to professors where you're like, oh, this is going to be great once the park opens?
Oh yeah, every conversation that I've had, I there's some details I can't really talk about yet, but we'll have a nice conversation about that in the upcoming months. But what I'm seeing, even just recently, we had a board meeting about this. I could see the people who are working on the physics talking to the people who are working on the computing and beginning to see not just how to work together, but how they're going to be able to bring in the larger community. There's a whole set of hobbyists. There's a set of kids out there, 14 years old right now, who are going to be a part of this conversation. And if we can create a world where they get to be in it sooner rather than later, we're gonna see that transformation happen much more quickly. So yes, all of it is going to be cool. It's all gonna be very exciting. And we'll look back on it and we'll say, man, that was the right thing to do at the right time.
What role do you expect to play within the park as the chancellor here?
Well, two roles. One is to support what it does and to support all the people who are gonna be a part of it. Students, faculty, all of our partners. But also, you know, this is my world. This is what I do. There's going to be a lot of opportunity for the kind of AI and machine learning that I do. And I won't be able to help but to be technically involved when the opportunity arises. But mostly this is about supporting others. And, you know, if I get to do a little bit of work and write a couple of equations along the way, that's good for everyone.
But not equations.
Oh, yeah, okay. Equations.
Okay. You touched on this a little bit, but what do you think the creation of the park will mean for everyday Illinoisans in 30 years?
Oh, in 30. So it's very hard to predict 30 years out, but I will tell you that when we get this right, and I think we have all of the ingredients to get it right, it will become a center of economic activity. It'll become a center of research activity. It'll become a center of innovation. But actually, even more importantly than that is not just IQMP itself will do with the specific technology we're focusing on, but it'll be a demonstration of what's possible when you have public private partnerships like this, when government, when education, whether private or public, and when industry, we're talking startups, and we're talking big established companies that have been around for a century, what they're able to do together. And if we can do that and marry it with all the other things that we're trying to do, all the other spaces where we're trying to be that require that kind of collaboration, then we will have a model. And we will see it replicated in a variety of ways, in a variety of domains across Illinois first and the rest of the country. And that's going to mean jobs. It's going to mean new things that we can't even anticipate now. And we will get to be at the center.
Okay, now for one of the harder questions, perhaps. President Trump has targeted the University of Virginia and the University of Southern California, and not just Ivy League schools. Have you heard from the Department of Education? Are you preparing for them to potentially cut even more federal funds in an effort to end diversity, equity, and inclusion practices here?
So I think there's a couple ways to think about that. And the way that, I think about it is I'm assuming that we will eventually find ourselves a target, as is everyone in higher ed. This is a concentrated and thoughtful attack on higher ed. I use the word attack on purpose. I think that this is a conversation that the federal government is trying to force between us and everyone else about what the purpose of universities are, and particularly what the purpose of large research universities are. So we are going to be a part of that conversation, whether we are personally asked to do something or personally targeted. We've already seen some effects of what's happened over the last several months. I myself had one of my grants ended from work that I was doing before I got here. I expect that we will see more of that. What that effect is going to be is unclear. We may actually be fine in some sense if you just looked at the bottom line, if you looked at the total amount of research funding over the next several years for at least some time, or we might find ourselves really having to scramble under the changes. It's hard to know where that's going to be, but one thing that we know that we have to do is that we have to prepare for it now. We have to think very hard about how we're going to react in the worst case, the best case, the medium case, and all the possibilities. We've already seen some people who've been directly impacted. We know some others will be directly impacted over the coming months and over the coming years, and we're going to have to plan for supporting them. I think, though, if you wanted to pop up a level and ask the question, not just what is happening next week or what's happening next month, the real question here is, what do we want public universities to be? What do we want private universities to be? What do we want research universities to be? We have not been having that conversation. Not really, not with the public over the last 5, 10, 15 years, and it's time to really have that conversation. Not just to tell our story and to save our own skin and what we do and to keep doing things the way they've been done, but to help everyone to understand why what we do is important for them and why we are in this together. And so I think really the question for me, aside from the real things that are happening, the real people right now and the impact it's having on the work that we're doing is, what are we going to do to lead this conversation over the rest of this decade, or indeed over the rest of the century, to make certain that we all end up in a good place 158 years from now, right? That we were able to look back on this and say that the compact that we created with the public is a good one and allowed us to move forward in a way. You will hear me say this a lot over the next year. That what drives me and I think is really central, particularly at a moment like this, is that we be good ancestors. That we are people who think not just about what's happening next week or even the next 10 years, but we think about the next generation, the generation after that, and the generation after that. This is one of those moments where things are changing enough, where the world is rethinking everything, both here and across the world, that we have to think hard about what our descendants are going to say about us. And that means leading conversations, including having some difficult conversations. Mm.
You mentioned that one of your grants was terminated. Can you talk a little bit more about that? How much was it? What was it for?
It was about supporting students as they moved through from graduate school into the professoriate. It was work that I had been doing for, actually at this point, maybe 10 years at a variety of places. I had moved away from being on the ground for a lot of that as I've gone through my career to supporting others. The work is still being done. It's really about making certain that the professoriate continues to grow, that graduate students continue to be a part of it, and that a variety of universities that have influence on that, particularly in computing, this is specifically in computing, understand how to support students and to bring them along. We are coming upon a demographic cliff that is particularly impacting well, a variety of disciplines, including my own, and finding ways to have students see that it's actually worthwhile being good ancestors to take that extra 4, 6, mm-hmm. 8 years to pursue a PhD, to move into the academy is something that requires work, and it requires work on our part. And so that's what that was all about. Hmm.
Was it specifically targeted for underrepresented students or anything like that?
It was targeted for increasing access for everyone, which of course includes underrepresented students.
Yeah, I was just wondering whether there were any keywords that might have come up at the time.
I'm sure there were, but it was a part of a lot of things that were cut at NSF.
How much was the grant for?
I'll be honest with you, I don't remember anymore. Okay. I always thought about the work
and
what we were able to do, and my salary wasn't being covered by it or anything. It was mostly about supporting outreach efforts for students and for faculty who were supporting.
Do you have a sense of the scale of grants here at U of I that were promised and then put on hold, and the scale of that money, how many dollars or percent or anything?
So I don't have the numbers in my head. I'm sure that, I mean, I'm absolutely happy to get it to you. Mm-hmm. You know, things were frozen, things were released, things were frozen again, new things were coming. It's changing moment by moment. Probably by the end of this sentence, it will have already changed again. So I don't want to tell you a number then have that number be completely different a week from now. But more than happy to talk that through and show you some of the history.
Yeah, sounds good.
Okay, I'm going to interrupt to take a short break. When we come back, more from my colleague Emily Hayes and her interview with Charles Isbell, the new chancellor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening today to my Illinois Public Media colleague, Emily Hayes, also an education reporter, who recently spoke with Charles Isbell, the new chancellor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. The school resumed classes today. Emily first spoke with him back in June, a very brief interview, and had a longer sit-down with him now that he is settled into the role. Before the break, they spoke about quantum computing and federal policy on higher education. And the conversation now turned to federal cuts to higher education. I should say, because this part of the program is on tape, we're not taking calls live, but you can always let us know what you thought. Our voicemail line is 217-300-2121.
So this is a question from the Graduate Students Organization. What would happen to employees if their work funded by federal grants is cut? Would U of I step in to pay their wages?
Well, we would do the best that we can. I can't make promises about that because I don't know what the scale is going to be. I don't know the specific mechanisms by which different students are being paid. And we're talking about two different questions. Hidden in there, I think, are two different questions. One is, what's going to happen this semester? And what's going to happen 2 or 3 years from now? And what we're trying to figure out, and this is, I mean, I think you hear this theme over and over again, that this is a big transition period for all of higher ed and all the people who are affected by it. Are we talking about a fundamental restructuring of how we think about supporting graduate students, how we think about supporting faculty, how we do research, how we educate? Or are we thinking about something that is going to be very sudden and kinetic and then change 6 months after that? And we just do not know. So we are preparing. We have already done work before I got here. There's been a lot of work done in trying to build up and save funds for transitions for people to sort of help them get through. There's been a lot of talk and conversation about how do we help people move from one area of research to a different area of research. I mean, you know, if we think about this in the larger scheme of things, changes like this have happened always. They just normally take longer, right? There are 2 years of transitions. People have an easier time of thinking about how to do things differently. Well, this has been moving at an unprecedented breakneck speed. And that is part of what makes it difficult, is having to turn on a dime and think about how to do something on the scale of a few weeks in the middle of a semester, as opposed to, well, we need to plan strategically about this over the next couple of years. And a lot of the job here, and it's difficult because these things are real and immediate, but a lot of our job here is to think about how to turn this moment of very rapid change into a conversation about where we're going to be in a couple of years. So we're going to do the best that we can. We've already cut some things. We're trying not to grow, except in the areas where we absolutely are going to have to over the short term, so that we can help sort of buffer that through. So again, I'm not going to sit here and say, yes, we will cover everything, or say, no, we're going to cover nothing. We're going to do the best that we can to support the work and to support the people who are a part of our mission.
You mentioned some cuts. Can you provide some examples of ways that the budget has been constrained recently as you're trying to plan for this credential change?
Well, it's difficult because a lot of this happened, as you point out, I've only been here for a month. These conversations were happening long before I got here, and we're going to have these conversations over the next several months and the next year. But what has happened is the administrative units have been asked to think about how to be more efficient, how to do more with less, frankly, so that we can make certain that we support the larger mission of the university while doing the least amount of harm to people who are out there on the ground doing the work, not that the administration isn't also doing work. And we have put off making some decisions until we know where we're going to be. I'm looking, one of the first things that I started doing when I got here is to look at this office, to look at what's happening at the executive level, to see how we can be more efficient, bring things together so that we can take every dollar and have it last as long as we can. But these are still human beings, right? These are people with jobs. These are people who are doing important work. No one is sitting around just idly doing nothing. And so it's not as if we can say, oh, we'll just cut 20% and that'll be fine. That 20% represents real human beings who are doing real work that's really important. And so this is really a longer conversation about what it is we have to do, what it is we want to do, and then how we're going to do it. But we are being as thoughtful as we can about how to invest in the future. Do you want us to stop doing quantum? Do you want us to pull back on that? No, that would be a huge mistake, right, to not invest in that future.
What's your message to faculty members or students who are nervous their research or funding will be taken away?
I hear you. I've experienced it myself. We are seeing it happen everywhere, and a lot of it is beyond our immediate control. But what's important always to remember, and when I wake up every day, I think about this, there are three things that matter, particularly at an organization like this that's been around for well over 150 and about to go into 160 years. The mission matters. The people matter. The future matters. Right? So we will remain as true as we can to our mission. They are a part of that mission. We know that people make that mission go. We will support them as best we can under these circumstances. We will help them transition as they need. We will help them find new ways to do things. We will support them in every way that we can. And we will always do that with the future in mind. This is about long-term strategic decisions that we're going to be making. This is about partnerships that we are going to be building, and we are going to continue to do that.
Do you expect departments to be able to hire fewer students or faculty going forward?
Oh, that's going to matter from department to department and place to place, where it is they want to invest. And so I don't really know the answer to that question. I think people should always ask those questions. They should have asked those questions 3 years ago. They'll ask the question 3 years from now. Where is it we want to invest? Where do we want to grow? Where do we want to shift resources? And that's mostly going to be sitting out with the people who know what's going on and know where the possibilities are. And where they hit walls, where they hit constraints, resources, whatever, we will sit and we will talk that through.
And that was my Illinois Public Media colleague, education reporter Emily Hayes, speaking with Chancellor Charles Isbell of the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign.